The trial included a pretty wide range of tumors, both node negative and node positive. The lack of utility of MammaPrint is not in node negative per se, it's in patients who are determined to be low clinical risk.
Okay.
And that included a lot of node negative cancers. It actually included a few node positive cancers. And so the determination of low clinical risk is done using an adjuvant online based type of categorization. But I think
which is not online, so but yeah. So basically clinical
right.
staging. So
right.
yeah, of course, if you have a 4-centimeter node-negative tumor, you're talking about smaller node-negative tumors, I guess.
Right.
Or
right, no, that's it, right. You're right that adjuvant online, unfortunately, is not online right now, but we did include the way you can do it on your own in the manuscript. But essentially, the idea is low clinical risk patients aren't going to need chemotherapy no matter how biologically sensitive they are to chemotherapy because they're going to do well regardless. And so where the utility comes in...
That's with 70 gene.
Correct.
Okay.
That's with the data we have from the 70 gene assay in the MINDAC trial. What we're trying to say is that if you have a patient who has a high clinical risk as defined by that trial, and obviously that's an argument where you draw the line between low and high clinical risk, but if it's a patient who has a high clinical risk as defined by the trial, that the MammaPrint assay, if you come back with a low score, a low genomic risk score, would suggest the benefits that that patient's going to do well and that it's unlikely that chemotherapy is going to make a big impact on further reducing their risk. So the major data set from MINDACT, and it was a little bit of somewhat of a complicated design, in my opinion, but the major point was not so much the predictive value, it was more the prognostic value, meaning if in a patient population who has a high clinical risk, if you get a low genomic risk score from MINDEC, that patient population is likely to do well with hormonal therapy alone. It doesn't specifically exclude a benefit of chemotherapy, but it says that they're likely to do well without it anyway. There is a randomization in that trial, and in that randomization, it did not appear that chemotherapy offered additional benefit, either in the node positives or in the node negatives, about a 1% difference. And you can't just look at the cancer, you have to look at the patient as well. I would say in a 70-year-old woman, a 1.2 centimeter ER positive node negative cancer, I'm not going to do a genomic assay on that patient. Again, because their risk of complications from chemotherapy are higher and competing risks of mortality. But in a 32-year-old, I am going to do a genomic test for that 1.2 centimeter cancer.
And, you know, we tease this out all the time with our surveys, but just out of curiosity in terms of, yes, you have to individualize it, but 2.2 centimeters node negative in a 70-year-old woman?
No, I wouldn't do it in that patient either.
That's interesting.
But I would in a 60-year-old. I mean, at Dana-Farber now, we reflexively do Oncotype for 1 centimeter greater cancers who patients under the age of 65 or so. But I think everybody has to be comfortable with where they draw that line. And I think, as you said, you have to tailor it to the patient as well. It's not just the biology of the cancer that matters.
It appears, at least from this case, and I guess there are other cases that you will consider a genomic assay. Sounds like you prefer 21 gene in some node positive patients.
Yeah, I do. And I agree that right now that's counter to the current ASCO guidelines, but I think that's going to evolve as well. And obviously, we will have randomized data from Oncotype once the Taylor X trial comes out and eventually in node positive patients as well. I think it's worth just, to me at least, highlighting the fact that I really do think that these genomic assays have, next to HER2-directed therapy, have probably had the biggest impact on our care of patients in breast cancer of anything in the last 20 years. I mean, I think the fact that most oncologists, and you have experience with this from your surveys, are getting comfortable using these assays and we're cutting down the use of chemotherapy substantially. There are now studies showing, you know, that oftentimes these assays can help change decision-making in almost half the patients in whom they're used. And I just think these have really been a tremendous improvement in our care, and I'm glad that people are now comfortable with them.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I don't know whether people who are sort of newer to oncology realize that, I mean, this has really maybe been 10 to 12 years that the data came out. And prior to that time, there was a consensus conference, I think it was in 2000, that said everybody with a tumor over 1 centimeter gets chemo.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And that seems so archaic right now. And you're right, it's not very long ago. And it's, you know, it just shows you that we all kind of knew that the chemotherapy was not likely to be very beneficial in those patients, but having that objective genomic score makes it a lot easier to talk to patients and makes us feel a lot more comfortable deferring chemotherapy in that patient. And I think it's been a big deal.